heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Well, this is a first for us. I want to give you the conclusion of the show right up front here. Let me give you the conclusion, and then we'll tell you the story here. The West is dangerously dabbling with the seeds of its own destruction by accepting a communist China as a partner in manufacturing pharmaceuticals, general manufacturing, and more so, technological development, when it is indeed a competitor, and even more than that, friends, you would call them an enemy, and they're determined to destroy all that is not Chinese. It's a big statement. One of the greatest weaknesses to the security of Western secrets is the hiring, employing, using, or teaching citizens from China. You know, for our protection, colleges and universities, schools of all kinds. Once you hear this report today, I think you might agree with me. They should be cleansed of all Chinese influences, including students, visiting faculty, and staff, particularly those employed in the sciences. Any of them, a man or a woman, could be a spy for the Chinese People's Liberation Army. Unlike us in the West, dear friends, who only plan for the next week, you know how we do that in America here. The Chinese mind looks ahead to the next century, and they see themselves as masters of the world. Okay, so that's the conclusion, people. And now you would probably say, oh my, OMG, let's put it that way. OMG, Malcolm, where are you going with this? I mean, that is about as big as a xenophobe statement as you could possibly make, the conclusion I just gave you. Sounds very bigotry, racist, and not appropriate at all. Friends, today's broadcast may not be for everyone. You may want to consider whether you want to listen to this program or not, but you'll learn some things, I assure you, with the story I'm going to give you here. You'll need to pay close attention as we dive into the story about China. This may be, potentially, the biggest program I've done to date, from my mouth to your ears. So pay attention. Well, friends, in 2016, the Chinese initiated a national gene bank with the intention of being the world's largest repository of such data and to utilize China's valuable and growing genetic resources to promote and safeguard their national security in bioinformatics. Now, bioinformatics, that's the science of collecting and analyzing complex biological data such as genetic codes. So why, you might ask? Well, that is to enhance China's capability to seize the strategic command and advantage in some future bio-warfare. Again, one of the things I've tried to share with you over the past many years is America does not plan for anything. We don't plan for a damn thing. The only thing we plan for here is the next election. You see, countries like China don't have that problem. They don't need to plan for the next election because they put their cats in there for a lifetime or long as they can. But that's what happens in an environment like ours. We have these elections every 2, 4, and 6 years, and that's where our policy, it's going to be our biggest downfall, I think you're going to find ahead, is that we don't plan accordingly. We're not planning ahead. There's really nobody here that's looking 50 years ahead or 100 years ahead, probably not even 20 years ahead. It's really day to day here. This is a big problem. Don't lose sight of that. So how did they come by the coronavirus that they so sloppily allowed to fall on the floor and shatter in that bio lab you've been hearing about in Hubei province there in China? Let me call this an intentional accident. I mean, may not make sense at the moment, but it will when we get done with this talk here. It's an intentional accident. You know, Trump, President Trump has been talking to Xi Jinping and the Chinese leadership. And I'll say to you, he knows what has taken place here. You can almost see that in the president's body language if you watch real closely when China comes up in conversation. Just watch his body language and the tone of his words. You know, you've been hearing now the president refer to this as the Chinese virus, to the dismay and dislike of the tolerant left, and of course the Chinese, who are very outspoken about it. But as the president has explained, that's where it is from, China. And he's reminding them, because they've been pulling that same projectionism gift that the left does real well by saying it's America's fault. They literally, their foreign ministry and the people in China have literally been blaming America. And that's what they've been telling their people. It's no different than what they do in Iran, North Korea. They tell their people what they want them to hear. They don't have an open press. So China's People's Liberation Army, the PLA, is emerging as the primary agents when it comes to biowarfare. And their goal of using these weapons that we'll talk about here today is to achieve a bloodless victory. So let's call it a bloodless victory. You don't have to fire a missile or a shot with this one, people. You get the picture of where you're at right now? So right now, we're being told by experts to accept that this coronavirus originated in Wuhan, China. And we're also hearing that, you know, you remember seeing some of the early images that there was a bat's ass in soup. They were talking about it coming from there, or it was in that seafood market. And none of that is accurate and truthful. It's all bad information, just propaganda for the media. It didn't originate in Wuhan, China. There's a whole story behind this, and let me share that now with you. So a few years back, there was a 60-year-old Saudi man who was hospitalized in Saudi Arabia for excessive coughing, running a high fever, and here's the big one, shortness of breath, because this thing attacks your respiratory systems. Now, this guy was not a smoker. He had no history of cardiopulmonary disease, and he was not on medication. Strange symptoms, actually, for a guy that was pretty healthy. You know, Dr. Ali Mohammed Zaki, an Egyptian virologist, isolated and tagged an unknown virus from the man's lungs. It was a coronavirus, but diagnostics failed to identify the cause of his infection. Well, it was a conundrum. And another virologist, Dr. Ron Fauchier from the Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam, was consulted. So using a broad spectrum, pan coronavirus real-time polymerase chain reaction, it's called RT-PCR method, Dr. Fauchier sequenced a sample sent by Dr. Zaki to look for distinguishing features of comparison to a number of these coronavirus possibilities that have already been known to have infected humans, because there's a history of this, people. This ain't the first one. Won't be the last one either. Well, X-ray images from that first day of the Saudi man's admission just days later was confirmed the suspect virus was to be a coronavirus. The British Health Protection Agency electron microscope also showed an image of a coronavirus, part of a family of viruses, in fact, that cause ailments, including the common cold, you may not know that, and SARS. You've heard of SARS. It's a virus strand first identified in the Middle East. Well, Dr. Fauchier received the then unknown sample from Dr. Zaki, passed it on to the scientific director of Canada's National Microbiology Laboratory, a Dr. Frank Plummer in Winnipeg, Canada. Now, we'll refer to that ahead as the NML, the National Microbiology Laboratory, NML. Okay? So in March 2019, a shipment of this coronavirus was discovered being smuggled out of Canada to China, stolen from the Canadian lab in Winnipeg by Chinese agents. Okay, so that was March 2019. So it was stolen by these Chinese agents from that lab in Canada. and sent back to Wuhan. That's how it got into Wuhan. But then I'll tell you more about Wuhan in a moment and how that all happened. So the investigation traced it to those Chinese scientists working at the Canadian lab. Subsequent inquiries linked the scientists to the Chinese biological warfare program, where the virus was compromised by spillage or breakage, calling the Wuhan coronavirus outbreak. I mean, this is what caused it. So it was an accident within that laboratory specifically. I mean, the Chinese leadership did not plan to turn that on to their own people. This was being developed for future biowarfare against their enemies. It wasn't exactly against the Chinese people specifically that we know of. But there was that accident there, you know, that happened. Of course, the rest of it was very intentional. That's why I called it an intentional accident. You see? What's that old saying goes, people? You know how that said there? Shit happens? Yeah, something like that, huh? So Canada's, that laboratory, the NML Winnipeg Laboratory, they got their sample back where this thing started on May 4th, 2013, from the Netherlands. I was just telling you about Rotterdam, right? So Canada's lab-grown stocks of the virus were used to assess diagnostic tests to see which animal species, if any, could be infected with the new strains. Now, let me explain here. This research was legitimately done by the Canada's Food Inspection Agency's National Center for Foreign Animal Diseases. And this, and by the way, just so you have this all in your mind, this here is conveniently housed, located in the same complex as, you guessed it, the NML, the National Microbiology Laboratory. Now listen, the National Microbiology Laboratory, the NML, and the Canadian Science Center for Human and Animal Health in Winnipeg has a long history of offering comprehensive testing services for coronaviruses, in fact, you know. This lab was on the front lines of the SARS coronavirus, and in 04 identified another coronavirus called NL63. So in Canada, everything was on the up and up. Don't be misaligned there. That's, everything was fine there. The problem is the Chinese agents in the laboratory, which is why I started that pretty robust conclusion up front there, that you might have been calling me names at that point, you know? So the Canadian lab was specifically targeted by these Chinese agents in what could only be considered as nothing less than biological espionage. Now enter Dr. Q, a Chinese warfare agent. Now she was a Chinese scientist who earned her medical degrees from the Hubei Medical University in 1985. She and her husband, Dr. Cheng, came to Canada in 96 as graduate students, allegedly. Well, later she affiliated with the Institute of Cell Biology and the Department of Pediatrics and Child Health at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. But she was not engaged studying the pathogens. She and her husband were, in fact, Chinese PLA biological warfare agents working at Canada's National Microbiology Lab. Now, her husband, Dr. Cheng, also affiliated with the lab, served as a bacteriologist who shifted to the virology that I just explained. Among his other titles, he was from the Institute of Military Veterinarian and the Academy of Military Medical Sciences in China. This couple were quite the duo, in fact. They were responsible for infiltrating Canada's NML with Chinese students, also agents, by the way. Now, here's the catch. These students from a range of Chinese scientific facilities directly tied to the PLA's China's biological warfare program. So the Canadian investigation of this intercepted shipment, the incident was traced to the NML. And just a bit later, July 2019, a group of Chinese virologists were forcibly removed from the NML in Canada. This is Canada's only level 4 facility and one of only a few in North America, friends, that is equipped anyways to handle the world's deadliest diseases, you know, Ebola, SARS, coronavirus, I mean, you get the picture. So under her exposure as a Chinese espionage agent, Dr. Q was serving as head of the Vaccine Development and Antiviral Therapies section in the Special Pathogens Program. And this is since 06. She had been studying powerful viruses at the NML. We don't know how much was lost from that laboratory sent back to China. We don't even know at this point. We have no way of knowing. It's been going on for a period of years, as you can see from the timeline here. Now, with the discovery of this massive, we'll call it, Chinese espionage scheme, the University of Manitoba ended all the programs, reassigned all the graduate students, and warned staff, students, and faculty about the dangers of compromise by traveling to China. Huh. So this investigation is still ongoing today, and questions remain whether previous shipments to China or other viruses or preparations, because this time period was 06, 2006 to 2018. That's a long period of time, people. You can do a lot of damage in 12 years. Hell, you can do a lot of damage in 12 days or 12 hours. In 2018, Dr. Q also collaborated with three scientists from the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, studying post-exposure immunotherapy for two Ebola viruses and the Marburg virus in monkeys. You see a lot of times the monkeys with these viruses. It's a study supported by the U.S. Department of Defense Threat Reduction Agency. Well, Dr. Q made at least five trips during the 2017-2018 school year to the Wuhan National Biosafety Laboratory of the Chinese Academy of Sciences. You know, coincidentally here, the Wuhan National Biosafety Laboratory, just so for the record here, is located just within sight of 20 miles from that famous seafood market you heard so much about that they said was the epicenter with the bat's ass and the soup and the food or the animals. You know, this is what happens with propaganda, clearly. Not too far from this laboratory in Wuhan. Well, so the Wuhan National Biosafety Laboratory now, again, is housed at the PLA military facility, the Institute of Virology, now linked to China's biological warfare program. It's the first ever lab in the country, by the way, designed to specifically meet biosafety level 4, BSL-4, the highest level of standards, you see. Okay. And they've studied all kinds of things there. I mean, Wuhan's known for this. The Wuhan Institute is known for this. I mean, SARS, H5N1, influenza virus, encephalitis, all kinds of stuff. I mean, and researchers at the Institute also studied the germ that causes anthrax. You remember anthrax running through the mail, the post office? Remember that? That was a scary moment, too. It's a biological agent once developed in Russia there. So, you get a picture now, friends, of all these bad diseases and these ailments that are running around the planet here in these laboratories. Just imagine how this one happened and how many more could happen in the future. You know, this is equivalent to our wary of nuclear weapons. If it falls in the wrong hands, in other words. If it falls in the wrong hands. If this falls in the wrong hands, if that falls in the wrong hands, just the same thing as a nuclear weapon. If a nuclear weapon falls in the wrong hands, or an intentional accident, or somebody gets it, they shouldn't have it, or these people who want to, you know, go see their Allah, or any of those folks, you see, there's a problem there. Same thing with this. You see how you can wipe out a whole bunch of people quickly. Do I have your attention now? I guess I'd ask maybe, huh? So Danny Shoham, he's a former Israeli military intelligence officer who has studied Chinese biowarfare. He says this, SARS is included with the Chinese bioweapons program at large and is dealt with in several pertinent facilities. You bet. A neurology professor at Georgetown University and senior fellow in biowarfare at the U.S. Special Operations Command, James Giordano, said China's growing investment in bioscience, looser ethics around gene editing, and other cutting-edge technology and integration between government and academia raised the specter of such pathogens being weaponized. Yeah, I think there's a lot to what Danny Shoham puts out there. So, knowing the Chinese future goals, this probably means they consider it an offensive agent or a modified germ to be let loose by proxies, for which China alone possesses the only treatment or vaccine. So this is, he goes on to say, this is not warfare per se, Shoham says, but what it's doing is leveraging the capability to act as a global savior, which then creates various levels of macro and microeconomic and biopower dependencies. So that's his opinion of what he's saying. I don't know that I totally agree with that. I think it is warfare, but either way, he's saying when you're the only ones that have the problem and the treatment of the vaccine, and then you wonder with this one here, well, why didn't they have the vaccine or the treatment? Because it was that intentional accident. They weren't ready to release it. So they didn't, and yet they're fooling around with it, but there was no vaccine. Now, they could have had a vaccine. They could have had a treatment ready for this. Absolutely. And there will be one for this. But again, when you have an intentional accident, and you're not prepared for the outcomes, well, that's what happens, people. Yeah. Makes sense? Makes sense to me. Well, China's biological warfare program, again, is believed to include a full range of traditional chemical and biological agents capable of being dispensed by a wide variety of delivery systems. And we've talked about this before, but this includes artillery rockets, aerial bombs, sprayers, short-range ballistic missiles. You know, that's when you've got a military component to this thing, and you know, it's no secret anymore of what you want to accomplish. And that's why you see a lot of our leaders and our military leaders and our political leaders get pretty edgy when they're using chemical weapons in Syria. And we say, oh, no, you're not supposed to do that. That breaks the rules, crosses the line. We don't like that, like when Assad has done that back and forth, yeah? That's why, because you kill a lot of people in a short period of time. It's a serious business, you see. And, you know, and there are many ways you can release these on the public. There are many, many ways. I mean, you don't need a missile or a rocket either to do that, as we're seeing right now. Just people-to-people combat, just in the normal way of life, is also an interesting way to kill a lot of people, as you're seeing right now. So, you know, China's Academy of Military Medical Sciences actually developed an Ebola drug, by the way, called JK05, but little about it is known nor confirmed. The defense facility is in possession of the virus, prompting speculation its Ebola cells are part of China's biowarfare arsenal. And this is what Shoham put. He posted this on the National Post, so this is what he said there. You know, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention classifies Ebola as a Category A bioterrorism agent, meaning it could be easily transmitted from person to person, which is what we're dealing with right now with this coronavirus, resulting in high death rates and may cause panic. You think so? High death rates might cause panic. Now, we've got a lot of panic right now, people, you know. The PLA in China clearly is pursuing military applications, friends, for biology and looking into connections with other disciplines, including, now here you go, brain science, supercomputing, artificial intelligence. You see where this is all going now. You know, it's going to be, we say it's interesting times we live in. I can't imagine what the hell they'll be saying 100 years from now if they make it that far. You know, just look at the last line, including brain science, supercomputing, artificial intelligence. And then you see the evil in the world and the chances of these kinds of things falling into evil hands and what happens. I don't know. You know, maybe we are living in the last greatest generations of humanity. Hard to know where it goes from here, people, isn't it now? Fascinating. Scary as hell with all the unknowns that are out there. And so with all that said, there's a lot more to talk about when we look at the military applications of this or not. And we look at, you know, the kind of people who possess these, you know, these viruses that are in these laboratories. And it's tricky because America is an open society. You know, America, again, as the left always points out, we have that statue, the statue up in the harbor there that they, you know, ended up throwing the words on after the fact to welcome all the huddled masses and everybody else who needs a seat at the table, which is part of the problem of why we've been tearing each other up over the past 4 years. We've been after each other's throats on which way forward for America. So possibly, potentially, maybe, is this the wake-up call, I wonder? Is this it right now? Is this the wake-up call to political leaders? I mean, will this be the knock on the head to these brain-damaged politicians to understand the damage of China? Because, you know, after the last 4 years that they've made a mockery out of the relationships with Russia, I've told you countless times it was never Russia was our problem or our foe in the way that China is. I'm not saying they're our best buds or our blood brothers either. But we can work with some of these people. We have a hell of a lot more in common with Russia than we have a lot of this, certainly the North Korea, Iran, or China. You get the picture, people. And yeah, the old, you know, the old saying that Trump totally gets this in his art of the deal, and it's really the art of Sun Tzu. You know, you keep your enemies close by and you talk and work with them, which Trump has done brilliantly, by the way. Now, that drives the left insane. They don't know how, what do you mean you're talking, you think Xi is this or you're talking to that one or this one or Putin? What do you, you know, they don't get the concept of what that means. They just don't get it, people. I don't know if it's because of their IQ and the lack of it or whether they have other means to an end here with their globalist mode and operandus of what they see in the future of an America. Because these people are looking at a different America than what most of us are looking at. Certainly the people listening to this program, probably. You know, so there is the challenge now. And then, you know, you begin to do the math real quick in your lives and in your homes and in your families and your kids and your grandkids and future generations. And you wonder, you know, yeah. And then it puts it all into perspective, doesn't it, there? You know, it really does. And when I say up at the top of AmericaOutloud.com, here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. You say, well, how do we do that? Because we have some challenges now that are, to some people, would seem insurmountable. To get, and right now, we're just looking to get to the other side of this pandemic right now. But then, people, as I've reported to you in the past many days, there are some lessons learned that need to be talked about here. And here's the real thing that comes into the point now with we the people, and what I empower you all to do is to rise and take it back, because there can't be any middle ground when it comes to this kind of thing. You know, when they talk about unity, as I pointed out to you yesterday, there is no unity. Yesterday, there is none today. It is a foe, what you're seeing today. There will be none tomorrow. That sounds like a harsh statement. But when you look at the attacks that they have put on the Republic and after this president in the past many years, people, come on, figure it out for yourself. The talk of unity is just total rubbish. It's not going to happen. So that separates now. That separates the patriots from, I don't know what you want to call that other group, you know? I mean, we could come up with a lot of adjectives here, but, you know, you get the picture of what we're talking about. And so, as I said to you yesterday on the program, how do we bring this all back to the framers and what to the vision of what the framers had of a great America here? You know, we're at an incredible tipping point in this nation. We're at that really tender point of, you know, I'm 243 years in. I mean, we're at that fragile moment of where most powers go down. And it's something I need to remind you all, because I don't know if is America going to be the rule or an exception to that rule is something we don't really know right now. But then I bring you to the dangers of what I'm speaking about here in China. And then you'll have to see the reality. So listen, I'm not a conspiracy kind of guy. I don't play with all of that. I think you probably have to know that about me. I deal with facts and data. And when a lot of this research And I've been sitting on this research for a couple of weeks. I've been working with this and looking at how to release this to our listeners and what to say about it, so it doesn't come across like I'm a, you know, some kind of a crazy nut job here, that you can make sense of it. I can make sense of it. You can make sense of it. And then we're warned accordingly. And what do we do with that right now? So let's talk next, friends, about the military applications of this and how also this could have been stopped, this pandemic, even after the intentional accident that happened in Wuhan, that it could have been stopped, but it wasn't stopped because China didn't want to stop it. They didn't want to work with America. They didn't want to work with our leaders. And now we're reaping the rewards for that. And here we are, friends. Colonel Jim Warshak will be here right after the pause. It's a big conversation today. Stay right there. More Voice of the Nation in just a moment.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. You know, I wasn't looking forward to having this conversation with you, actually, truth be told. I really was skittish about talking to you today about all of this. I really was. And I even thought about not having this talk because I don't want to come across. I'm not one of those cats that come across as an extremist lunatic or a conspiracy guy. But, you know, friends, we have to look at facts and we have to study the facts. We have to look at the data. And the story I told you right now is true and it makes sense. And if you tie this to everything that is out there, you can also cross the T's and dot the I's and know that it is accurate information here. So the military component I put out there is an interesting one. And I want to bring on now a dear friend of the network here and of this show here, and that is Colonel Jim Warshak. And Colonel Warshak is retired from United States Air Force. He is a career senior intelligence and special missions officer, former deputy director of intelligence at U.S. Central Command, served on the White House National Security Council. Colonel Jim is a great voice here. He's also not a man of conspiracy, deals with facts and data, and as a military officer, and that is important to understand. Now, Jim, I hadn't shared a lot of what I just gave to listeners with you prior to this talk yet. And I know I asked you to trust some of the information I was going to put forth here, although you knew some pieces, but not all the details of what I've just discussed with listeners. Let's start here before I get into these other things about how we could have stopped it and all of that. Talk to me about the military application of these kinds of things and what your takeaway is from that in regards to China, please.
What I want to first say is, you know, over the last month or so, I've been following this relatively closely, just like everyone else, and certainly just like you have, and have pretty much gone the same route based on the facts and the data and information available that you have, as well as some additional information that I've seen, and it pretty much lines up, you know, almost carbon copy to what you laid out to the listeners, you know, for the last 40 minutes or so. So we're on the same sheet of music. From a military application, I always look at this two ways. Strategic, what would the overall impact be by an adversary, if you want to classify China as an adversary or whoever might have this capability at their hands. And I look at it from a standpoint asymmetrically, and I think you laid that out very well from this standpoint. We always look at bio warfare or chemical warfare from the standpoint of, you know, it's dropped on people via aircraft or missiles or rockets or what have you. I look at this kind of situation asymmetrically, and that is exactly what we're seeing here. There was no military or traditional military application in how this virus spread. It was spread as a result of an intentional accident, as you very well laid out, and that's how it can be applied. And you know, I always talk to people when people think of, well, the Iranians are going to get a nuke and they're going to fire it via rocket or missile on Israel. And I always say, why do they have to go through that? They could stick a small nuke in the trunk of a car and drive it across the border at a certain point, and or put it on a donkey cart and detonate it in the middle of a city. It's the asymmetrical application that is very important here. How this virus was transmitted into the U.S., into Europe. There's discussion out there, and I haven't followed through completely on it because I just started to hear more about it, that the virus doesn't exist in Russia or North Korea. So that's kind of an interesting take, and maybe we'll learn more about that in the coming days and weeks. But you're exactly right on every point you hit from the standpoint of what's the intent, what's the outcome. And from the standpoint of the U.S., we've been watching Wuhan for a long time. This isn't some place we just figured out. And your comments about it came about from a market 20 miles away. That is Chinese propaganda that they put out to try to cover up and cause the international and Western media to run with it, which a lot of them did very well. But it did start in Wuhan, and what preceded in Canada over the last year, 8 or 10 dozen years or so, whatever, is the prelim to all this. But now that it occurred in Wuhan, China, we've been watching that. And the intelligence community started to get some insight to what was going on in Wuhan with regard to this. A lot of the information is still classified because to reveal it would potentially reveal who is reporting on this back to the U.S. intelligence community from Wuhan, China. And so they're not putting that out. But, you know, safe to say, probably sometime in November where we started to see indications. And it was in December where a lot of back channel communications was going on, as I discussed in my article today, that President Trump and other diplomats within State Department and other organizations were already going to China saying, hey, you have a problem here. We need to help you because this could potentially turn out to be a greater thing that you want to have on you. And the Chinese, in somewhat arrogance and believing they had it and they could take care of it, refused multiple times for assistance. And the president offered assistance from the CDC, National Institute of Health, FDA, and what have you, as well as private universities that do this kind of research in the U.S. And the Chinese each time refused. And then finally, just a few weeks ago is when they realized it was totally out of control and there has been some help. But they're trying to cover any semblance that it actually occurred in China. And that's why we saw the pushback on calling it the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus or whatever. That's all being promulgated from China through the Western mainstream media. And that's why you see them all up in arms when the president says it originated in China. So that's what we go by. In fact, there are 17 other illnesses that have started in different parts of the world over the last century, and we have no problem calling those what they are. All have originated, you know, the West Nile virus that originated in that region of the world. All of a sudden, we're playing political correctness, and this is all part of the effort of the political left and the Democratic Party to use this now as a weapon against President Trump's reelection.
That's right. Yeah. The article column that Jim just referenced a moment ago to your friends is on AmericaOutloud.com. And it's entitled Facts Behind the Coronavirus Outbreak. It could have been stopped. And so what Jim does in here is he gets into the points that he was just talking about, how that it could have been stopped. And here's the thing. As he said, President Trump offered, he offered complete assistance. And I remember that, him doing right out of the gate. And he offered a lot of these agencies and help to get out there, not only in a case to help the Chinese in what had happened here in this potential intentional accident, you know, but also as a means to gather information to help America out, knowing that this thing is going to spread worldwide and will end up being here in America. It is a global world today. It's an environment that is that's just the way it is, people, today. There's no way to stop something that's going to start in Africa or the Middle East or China or wherever. It's going to hit probably the whole world. And that makes us even more at risk. But China refused all that help, as you said, Jim. They refused it in typical Chinese fashion. But there's a lot more to this as well, because a lot of the people who were, you heard about the doctor who initially tried to speak up and who was reprimanded and banged up pretty good, who died, they say, from the virus. We don't know. But a lot of other leadership there, I do know from reports, have been, are now missing in action. They're no longer, you can't find them anymore. So China does exactly that. If you speak out against any of this, they have a way of removing you from society quickly. Is that right, Jim?
Oh, of course. Any totalitarian regime automatically muzzles and removes people, either sent to prison or potentially worse, depending on what they deem as the extent of damage that that person can cause. And in many cases, you have these experts who really want to, who know the magnitude of what's at stake and come forward mainly to offer, hey, this is how bad it is. You need to know about this so that we can curtail it from spreading or ending up in other countries. And in the case of China, this is going on, and a lot of these people are just no longer heard or seen. And again, it goes back to whether you want to call it Chinese pride or they want to prevent them from getting the blame, because that means money. It all comes down to economics for China. And they're already, you know, it's interesting when you see the President Trump talk about President Xi, he always speaks publicly about him very favorably. And that's for a reason. The last thing he wants to do is antagonize this guy. And while he will negotiate on issues with regard to trade and whatever it is, he's on the surface, he's never going to criticize a world leader unless he absolutely has to. But he doesn't want to cause them to, you know, go half cocked, so to speak, and retaliate in some other way. So it's part of how he negotiates. And early on, he's always said he's willing to sit down with the most notorious badass in the world and look in their eyes and see how they're thinking and how they react to things. He's willing to do that, you know, rather than say, okay, I'm not talking to this individual because I don't like him or this reason. Trump doesn't play that game. He will sit down with anybody. And he's made that effort with Xi. And I think he understands and he realizes what Xi is doing. Mm-hmm. And he knows they are retaliating because they are losing it really bad economically because of the sanctions and what Trump is doing economically. And I guarantee what's going to come out of this is, you know, 95% of the U.S. Drug production comes out of China. That's going to change. And that's going to be the next thing that he pulls back to America. And of course, you know, we can put our FDA approval and monitor the development of these kind of things. So, you know, that's the good that comes out of this eventually once this subsides and hopefully goes away.
That's a good point. It's a good point. That's a great silver lining that Jim points out there, people. But, you know, Jim, I wonder, the pharmaceutical meds, I think everybody knows about right now that 95% of that is produced over the air, which is totally insanity how that ever happened. It's beyond comprehension. I mean, we've given it to our adversaries to control our health and well-being for our parents and our grandparents and just really about anybody who needs these drugs. And by the way, for the record, people, when you think, well, but they would never hold those back, they already threatened to do that. Is that right, Jim? In these past couple of weeks, they already threatened to hold that back. Their leadership did.
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of the retaliation. It's the fine line that President Trump has to play now. You know, he's calling it the Chinese virus because of what it is, but he has to adjust and refine and negotiate because he knows we need certain things from them. So it's all part of the game, if you will, that he has to play until we have the capability to do all that. And I'll go right out and say it. This is all the result of the globalists, where they pull everything out of the United States and want to have it produced in other countries for economic reasons, and it takes away, you know, we lose the capability, we lose the brain power, we lose a lot when we don't do that. And this is what Trump is trying to do, is pull as much of this industry, if you will, whether it's pharmaceuticals and life-saving drugs to other types of technology back to America.
Well, and Trump ran on this. I mean, everybody remembers in 2015, 2016, this was probably the most, in addition to the Southern Wall, this was a pivotal part of President Trump being elected, was dealing with China. How many times did you hear that through the campaign? And then the trade deals. And, you know, he has turned the trade deals upside down, turned them around for the betterment of the United States of America, desperately needed, because we've been, you know, ridiculed over the past 35 years in trade deals from our prior administrations. You know, Jim, I'm wondering about manufacturing. I'm thinking here, you say, you know, we know what Trump had wanted to accomplish. I remember him having meetings with Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, over the past many, many months in trying to get them to get plants built here, because they were also doing the majority of their manufacturing in China. And in fact, they were taken to task a few times, as well as a few other companies, by the way, Jim, in regards to the sweatshops in China. There have been reports and videos and images of that and the sweatshops and how they treat some of their people, and that our United States manufacturers are using those facilities in such a way. Back to that silver lining a moment ago, is it safe to say that even beyond the pharmaceuticals and the meds, that things like the iPhones and all of that technology coming from Apple, but also a lot of the other manufacturers and a lot of our products that do come from China, Do you see those also taking a big hit with this, back to that silver line, and a lot of that manufacturing coming back to the States here?
Well, this is where China is going to have, first, this is where China is going to have to prove their integrity in everything, not just the pharmaceutical aspects, because this is going to cause a lot of question as to what's China doing? How are they using this? Just like pharmaceuticals, they can use, you know, and drugs, they can use, and the viruses and what have you, they can use and leverage that against the rest of the world and other countries for whatever reason they want. It's the same thing with, you know, microelectronics, everything that's in our computers. You see China going throughout the world looking for all the different types of metals and minerals and things that you need to build computers to make them better, more efficient, faster. You know, the iridium and tungsten and all the different kind of metals that are used. This gives China a lot of leverage when you start getting into that type level of technology, and that's one of the things that Trump realizes as an international businessman. This is going on, and it's been allowed to go on
long time.
At least since the early 90s. You know, you can trace this back to negotiations with China by many American companies, and like you highlighted, you know, it gets produced in sweatshops in China and in other countries, but they control the movement and access and everything about it, and that's where we're trying, where this president is trying to bring this back home for the benefit of the America and the world. You know, does he succeed in this? I think he does. I think he at least gets that moving. He's going to need another term to start that effort. But again, as I initially pointed out, it puts the onus now on China. What else are you doing with regard to technology and development of whatever it is you're producing? What's your intent? Are we going to have other intentional accidents? And that's going to back China up against the wall.
Yeah, and if you see here, this is why over the last couple of weeks, you see that China came out and endorsed Joe Biden for president. And they said, yeah, we know that the liberal media, democratic forces in the United States are preferential to, Joe Biden. I'm paraphrasing, of course, people, but it was something like that Beijing put out, and they said they endorse Joe Biden for president over Bernie Sanders and over Donald Trump. Any surprise there, Jim?
No, not at all. You know, this goes back to what I said earlier. Joe Biden would allow the status quo to stay as it is. This is the globalist. They want to have leave things as they are. Pharmaceuticals and drugs produced in China, computers and components and everything continue. That's what Joe Biden represents. That's the past of Barack Obama and George W. Bush and Bill Clinton, who incidentally was the president who signed a lot of agreements to have and allow pharmaceuticals to be produced in China. You go back to 1997, 98, a lot of that happened then, maybe a little bit sooner than that, 96. That's why China now is producing 95% of the pharmaceuticals and drugs that we need. It's why China was pushing the dangerous drugs that, you know, I know you've talked about on other shows. Mm-hmm. That's the result of that. And Trump wants to be able to bring that back and get better control and better analysis and assessment on what works within the U.S. government, it within America, where it really belongs, and that's what he's trying to do. And China is going to push back as well, and we're going to see this go on, because China is not going to stand idly by and say, okay, we screwed up, we'll let you have it back. Yeah. That's not going to happen that way.
Jim, I want to talk to you about military readiness. When it comes to China, as a military officer, I'd like to take the last couple of moments and inform listeners from military applications in how are we positioned in today's environment militarily against China. Can you give us a Cliff Notes 35,000 foot view on that, please?
Strategically, yes, China has nuclear weapons. We know that. And are they capable of reaching the United States? We know that. And we have the same. So we are in a position just like we were with Russia through the Cold War. And China, of course, was part of that too, where we can wipe out each other, you know, in a matter of hours, if that ever comes to the case. So that gets back to mutually assured destruction. Conventionally, China is trying, they are no match for the U.S. And the critical thing with China conventionally is they really have no power projection. They have no real capability to move large forces from China to some other place and try to get a foothold in another country. They're not going to really invade another country. They have a capability to move a few battalions, brigades, to places, and they do that. They'll send military trainers and advisors and You know, they're doing that all over Africa. They're building associations and partnerships with those countries, but you know, they work covertly and clandestinely with countries like Iran and others. But they just don't have power projection in the world. They're trying to get an aircraft carrier off the ground. You know, we have 13 aircraft carriers, and we're probably going to get some more. We have global power projection where they don't. So they're gonna stay in their part of the world, and our Pacific fleet is really a pain in their you know what, because we have maintained that level of capability in that part of the world, where basically we have them bottled up in their own ports. They can get out and do a few little things, exercise, but that's it.
Jim, let me also make another point here, because I don't want to give a false sense of security. Everything you just said is accurate enough, but I don't want to give a false sense of security, because let me say this. When it comes to something like we're dealing with right now, a biochemical weapon, I mean, you would have to, I think you would agree with me when I say all bets are off at that point.
Oh, absolutely. And as we first talked about, the asymmetric aspect of it is all they need is somebody within, an agent within the United States, and they have them, a saboteur, if you will, kind of go back to the rudimentary aspects of it, who could just drop a vial of this stuff, whatever it is, somewhere, anywhere in the United States, and you know, people are going to, you know, inhale it or somehow get it on them, they're going to get infected, and it, you know, it may not be this, it may be something else, whether it's anthrax or some other type of flu. They can do that. They can do it. This has always bothered me when I looked at, I'll give you a real quick little story. When I was going through my war college studies in Washington, D.C. back in the late 90s, we had a Chinese foreign affairs officer working as a senior fellow with us, and we knew she was a spy. We knew, because the intelligence community, the counter intelligence folks, were watching her. Every morning she would leave the Chinese embassy in Washington, come to our office. Every noontime she would go back there, and after lunch come to our office, and in the evening go back there. They followed her, watched her. We know that. And as you said, the people working in Canada who at the labs in Canada were all agents of the Chinese have infiltrated us to no end to do two things: to steal information, intelligence, intellectual property, and to observe, watch our reactions and how we do things, and be able to do something if necessary to hurt us. So, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, we're an open society, and we do this kind of stuff and allow other countries in, but we have to be very prudent to what's going on and what they're doing.
Well, we've got to take the precautionary steps now. And as you just said, that was a great example you just said with the Chinese tech there. These saboteurs are all over the place, as you said as well. They're throughout the system, and this is going to be the problem. Back to that openness of which has really been part of the political talking points over the past many years, is our technology is being stolen at a record pace. And it's being sent overseas, and this is what they're doing. So they don't really, they're not producing their own, they're stealing ours, and that's part and parcel of the problem. The rules are going to have to change. The way we handle these things are going to have to change. It's important to share this program today out there with people on in the world. The people need to hear this. They need to understand the consequences here. If we do nothing, we are risking. We are risking it all. These are very serious when it comes to these biochemical weapons and things of this nature, as you're seeing the results of that right now in a worldwide pandemic here. Thank you, friends, as always, for being part of this journey here today. It's time to get involved and get out.